Welcome to All the Therapies.
We're two clinicians who try out different therapeutic practices
so you can find the right type of healing for you.
I'm Abby Crum.
I'm Mona E. Shaker.
And if you're enjoying this podcast, please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe.
Thanks for joining us. Let's jump in now.
Welcome this week to All the Therapies. Really excited for this interview. As you know, Mona and I went on a self-care retreat and it was run by Rachel. And we're about to interview her. So Dr. Rachel Altvader, did I pronounce your name right?
Yeah, it's like Darth Vader. You got it. Spot on.
Wow. I think that was my reference. Great. She's a licensed psychologist and registered play therapist and supervisor and the creator of the Manifesting Balance Self-Care Retreat. So welcome, Rachel. And can you tell us a little bit about you?
Yes. Thanks so much for having me. This is so exciting. It is so lovely to see you both again, to be here with you both. I love what you're doing here with this podcast. Yeah, I am on the East Coast. So I'm on the other side of the country and I'm based close to Baltimore. I actually just moved, but you know, just for the purposes of location, I'm on close to Baltimore, but I own a group private practice in Baltimore County outside of Baltimore City called Creative Psychological Health Services. We specialize in the play and expressive based therapies. We serve all ages. And another specialty of mine is digital play therapy, which is incorporating technology based therapies into sessions. I'm the president of the Maryland DC Association for Play Therapy, and I teach and I train, which I guess is synonymous. I provide supervision and offer therapy services and write. I like to do all sorts of things. I think that's really a great benefit of the field that I chose for my career. And then, of course, doing the self-care retreat. I'm a huge proponent of self-care. This is maybe a little bit more than just an introduction, but I attended a self-care retreat probably almost 3 years ago now. So that actually inspired me. I'm sure we'll get more into that. But since that retreat, I have made self-care a priority. I think a lot of times it's a buzzword. It's easy for us to say, okay, we're going to take care of ourselves or have a bubble bath tonight or whatever it is. And, you know, it's so much more than that. So huge proponent for that. But yeah, kind of sprinkle myself a little everywhere. It's funny, we kind of introduced ourselves at the retreat, you know, with, I didn't know what to say. So I was like, I like sparkles. But, you know, it really has transpired through so much of my life. I do like to kind of sparkle myself everywhere. So yeah, I'm glad I've sparkled myself right here with you both today.
Awesome. Thank you. And it's just so nice to see your face again. It's been few weeks, I think. And so, you know, this is all audio. You cannot see the background of Rachel's Zoom. It is like colorful spots and dots.
Bubbles.
And it's bubbles.
And I have a little Doc Vader situation going on.
Okay, customized background. This is like a real painted background too. This is not like
digital. Yeah, it is. It's actually on my wall.
Very cool. Very you. I love that. So I do want to go back about play therapy because you're actually the first person, I think, that is a play therapist. So can you tell us a little bit more about what that is and what got you interested in that field?
Yeah, definitely. So play therapy really is what it sounds like. It's using play to help people. I know it specifically highlights children and, you know, some teens, but really it's anybody. Help them through their difficulties using expressive mediums and using toys. It's so wonderful because ultimately play is a child's natural mode of communication. We first learn how to interact with the world through play. Children often lack the verbal ability to articulate, to express, and really to understand some of what's going on in the world, in their lives. Children are very perceptive. Don't get me wrong about that. They pick up on things. However, to find the words to actually express what it is that they're going through, what they're witnessing, whatever it may be, internally, externally, whatever they're encountering, is challenging. So toys are like a child's words and play is their language. And with the modern child, technology is the modern facilitator of that language through play. So that's a quick rundown of play therapy, but ultimately I use different tools, different therapy toys, and provide the opportunity for children to be able to express what they need, how they need, and to work towards resolving some of their struggles with my support and our therapy connection. So that's a nice little elevator snippet speech of play therapy. And what got me into it, I actually knew I wanted to work with kids and teens. I love kids. I, you know, have worked with kids in various capacities. And so I went on my first placement when I was a master's student at a child site, and they did play therapy and they specialized in trauma. And that just became my passion. I did not realize how much I would love the work, but I fell into it and have not stopped pursuing more education and opportunities. And of course, you know, providing the services since.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's so important to kind of understand how play is important for kids. It's not just something, because like, I'm thinking about how they like cut recess. I don't know. That happened at like, you know, like in the 90s, they would just like cut recess, you know, like who needs that, you know, and like really understanding that, especially, and even if you're not a child listening to this, which I doubt you are, but like as an adult, just understanding ourselves as children, or if we do have children, like how they're communicating themselves to you. Yeah. But like, also, I do think play is so important for adults, like just having non-goal directed, you know, and there's been so much research into this. I think I was just listening to Esther Perel, you know, talk about this. But so how did you decide to create like a self-care treat for adults?
Yeah, I mean, selfishly, I wanted to do it for myself, which I guess, honestly, I'm going to actually...
I mean, that's why I do a lot of things. Yeah.
I'm actually going to remove the word selfishly.
Yeah.
Because I think that there is such a fine line between self-care and selfishness that the way that people perceive taking care of ourselves, right? So even I just did that. Like, oh, selfish. No, let me skirt. We're going to rewind. I wanted to nurture myself in the way that felt right for me. And I know that there are other people, you both included, who align with that as well. And so I wanted to create a creative space for us to be able to tap into the nonverbal parts of ourselves that might be experiencing things, holding on to things, or in need of things that we could provide in this creative nonverbal space. Although we did also, you know, of course, process things verbally because that's what we do. But yeah, I wanted just a moment to be, you know, one of my goals when I did attend that first self-care retreat was to go on one every couple of years. Like, I want that as part of my self-care plan. And the opportunity arose where I could actually teach one. I connected with the owner of the beautiful home that we stayed in.
Yes, it was Stacey Jagger.
Yeah, it was wonderful. And it just, the opportunity just presented itself and we just made it work. But yeah, I definitely wanted to connect to the expressive therapies for our own internal work and even some of our inner child work. A lot of us did. Of course, it's a protected space, so I won't be sharing a lot of the specifics unless you both, of course, want to share your experiences. But, you know, it provided this beautiful, safe, protected space for us to tap into our creative senses, sometimes where words don't fully reach.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that was my biggest takeaway. I think when we first signed up for the retreat, I'm not sure if expressive arts or play therapy was even mentioned, right? It was a self-care, you know, manifesting balance, right? And, you know, the tools that you use were all play therapy, expressive arts. So we kind of came into it a little bit like without that knowing, but it was so powerful. And I will say, like, you know, we're adults, we have responsibilities. There's almost this like aversion, and maybe that's what you're speaking to earlier of, well, I shouldn't play, or that's selfish. Like, what am I doing? You know, we kind of judge the process. But I kind of want to hear more about, you know, how play therapy can be useful for adults.
Yeah. I mean, kind of to piggyback on what I was just mentioning, being able to tap into that nonverbal space. This isn't just trauma only, but I'm going to talk about trauma specifically for a moment. Pre-verbal trauma, when we endure things as children, it could be something like, you know, being born prematurely, right? And all of the medical procedures or things that we witness or, you know, encounter, and we don't really have the words to make sense of that, right? So I like to use that as an example. It's not the only thing. But ultimately, when we encounter things before we have the verbal ability to express and understand what's going on, it is stored in our mind and body in a different manner. Right. And so when I was mentioning about us kind of tapping into some of those things that we have within ourselves, we all have things within ourselves from our backgrounds, from our histories, from our childhood, being able to really connect to the depths of ourselves is helpful. And so in therapy, being able to connect to this nonverbal space allows us to tap into that, which is super helpful. But also it's fun, right? It's just, it's a release. It's being able to connect to something else outside of ourselves. In therapy terms, a lot of what you want to do in play therapy with any age, but this is really great, you know, for what we're talking about with adults, is to externalize. It provides this safe enough distance for us to process things where it's not too close. You know, when we're talking about things that are really hard to talk about, but we don't always feel comfortable enough to say it, or actually better yet, I love to use this example. It's like having a dream where we wake up from the dream and like in our mind, we can visualize it. We're like, what was that? What was just happening in there? Hello, brain. What are you trying to tell me? And then we try to talk to somebody about it. Oh, I had this dream or this nightmare. And then there were like squirrels flying. And then like this motorcycle came out. And like whatever, you know, all these things. And when you start to explain it, it makes no sense at all. None. But in your head, you're like, but I can visualize it. But it is really funky to explain, right? Therapy using expressive means and play allows us to express that without needing to find a way to define it or verbalize it and make sense of it, like make it make sense, I mean, right? If we're able to utilize other object, other therapeutic tools to express, to work through, it just provides this added element of being able to use a metaphor, really, to express what it is that we are encountering or need to process.
Yeah, I love that, like, right, like you're talking about the kind of that projective process, you know? And I remember doing a training when I was in training. It was like the Violet Oaklander Rose activity. I don't know.
Yeah.
And like, essentially, now I want to do it. Mona said she hasn't done it, so now I want to like do it to you and not tell you what it is, but yes, I'll just say what it is. But, you know, essentially, like, without realizing it, you're drawing a rose, but when someone interviews you about it, you might not realize some of your feelings or things are showing up, you know, on the page. And that always stuck out to me. Like, again, it was a training in doing therapy with kids, but as an adult, I got so much out of that. And so I just think there is so much about that projective process. And I guess what we mean by that, if you're not familiar with that term, is like taking something internal and putting it external, you know, and art is just a really good way to do that. So I love that, you know, that was a main focus. And I think it was useful for everybody in the retreat. I mean, I guess we can only speak for ourselves, but it seemed like it was really useful for everybody there.
Absolutely. I actually have another thought too, to pertain to what you were just talking about with the projection piece. To further maybe explain it for us to connect to our own experiences, I always think about perspective and our perceptions, right? And so we form an understanding of ourselves, of others, and the world based on our interactions with others, what people have taught us, how we navigate through our lives, right? So all of our lenses, all of our perspectives are just a little different. We're going to see things, we're going to do things based on who we have come to be, based on all of the experiences we've been through. So ultimately, when we're looking at something, inevitably, we're going to be looking at it through our lens. It's going to have all of these pieces of information, data, maybe is a better word to use because it's experiences, it's lessons, whatever it may be. It's all the things we've absorbed throughout our life that have led us to be who we are. And so, and again, inevitably, we're going to view things in a certain way. We're going to see things in a certain way. So I think sometimes like with projective measures, people will think about like the Rorschach, where you will look at ink blots, you know, and then explain what you see. And sometimes that's very distressing for people because it feels very vulnerable. Like, I'm going to talk about this thing I can see. But really, I think if we're able to connect to it as this is just helping us uncover some of the things inside that we might not be so connected to, but that are there. And so it's super helpful to see what is coming out for us and how are we connecting to that and how is that maybe playing out through our lives. And then we have the information that has gone from the unconscious, things that we're not like consciously aware of, or things that are more nonverbal, we don't have, you know, words for, and shift it into more of our like present focus.
Yeah.
And it gives us clarity. So it's super helpful when we are engaging in like cognitive discussions, like we're actually verbalizing things like we are here. having this nonverbal piece to work from and then process it afterward. That's really helpful for adults. Now, with kids, we don't always verbally process things because they may still not really have that full ability, just given where they are developmentally.
Yeah. So you alluded to earlier that you went to retreat yourself and that inspired this retreat.
Yeah.
So could you share a little bit about what kind of you got out of that led you to want to create your own?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I want to give a shout out to Lynn Louise Wonders. She was the therapist who led that retreat. And I really feel like it was a life-altering experience. Mm. And that's also why I wanted to do some of my own in the future. You know, I ended up having sooner rather than later, which was great. But I wanted to carry out those ripples. But yeah, I endured quite a few really stressful things in my life. And just as a brief overview, I know this is not my own therapy session, but I'll just throw it out there anyway. but I endured a significant loss. And I had some pretty significant family stuff going on. And I had just moved halfway across the country after I finished my doctoral program and had endured some of Hurricane Harvey. Mm. And just there was just a lot of very intense things happening all at once. And then that was really my entry into my career. I graduated and I moved back to, around my hometown area and tried to establish a foundation. And I felt like due to a variety of factors, my foundation felt very unstable. I started questioning myself a lot more. I felt a lot more imposter syndrome. And for those of you who are listening who might not know what that is, it's basically feeling like you don't belong where you are and that you're an imposter, that I made it here because I somehow slipped through the cracks and nobody figured it out, but I have no idea what I'm doing. So that was some of my experience. And then I saw like a little ad for Lynn's self-care retreat. And without hesitation, I think it was similar to both of your experience. I'm like, I'm doing this. Like a lot of times I'll sit and I'll say, should I do this? Should I not do it? Let me think about it. I was like, I'm called to do this. So I went. And it was a 3-day. Actually, I think it was like 3.5 days. So like, somewhere around there, but around the same time length that ours was. And it was in the beautiful North Georgia mountains. And there were like miles of walking trails. It was a lot of connection to nature. She provided some yoga and meditation, and we had small group discussions. And I just really realized how important it was for me to nurture myself. And I think back to the significant loss, it was my best friend who had died, and she was working very hard. Mm. And I wonder if her immune system made it a little harder for her to heal. I don't know for sure, but that was altering for me because I recognized I need to make sure I'm tending to my body appropriately. Mm. So that way, I can continue to nurture myself and others. And I don't want my reality to be overworking for the rest of my life because that's how I was trained. That's more stuff I won't get too into. Talk to my therapist about it. So it's all good. But, I learned to overwork in my life. And that was honestly a way to cope with some of my stressors. And I didn't realize that until, obviously I'm reflecting on it later in life. But that became my reality. So that all really led me to a place of making self-care a tippy-top priority and being very intentional about it and not just having it be another buzzword for me. But yeah, connecting to nature and the beautiful like views and the delicious meals and just all of the nurturance. This is probably total TMI. I drank so much tea. I've never drank so much tea in my life. I was like constantly going to the bathroom, but I was like, okay, clearly my body is not being getting what it needs. Like down to the essentials, right? We get so busy in life and it's sometimes hard for us to meet our basic necessities. So more than you asked for, but all relevant information, especially the excess tea.
We needed to hear that tea piece.
All the tea. Relevant in more ways than one.
Come on, spill it. I mean, I just really appreciate it. I mean, I think we all kind of resonate with that piece of how easy it is to overwork, right? Culturally, like we are trained to do that way. And it gets reinforced, right? So the harder we work and grind, actually we end up like moving that in like in whatever job we're in. So it pays off. And it's literally not until life kicks us in the ass in some way, like either experiencing a loss, either, having your own health scare or dealing with your own health issues, you will eventually find a way where you're forced to take care of yourself. And I think that's sort of like the, interesting and unfortunate piece of life is like, that's how we like figure it out, especially when there's that huge cultural push with like overworking and burnout. So anyways, I just appreciate you just like sharing that because I think that's so real. And I just love how you were saying you came across this retreat and immediately there was just this like intuitive response. Yes, this is meant for me. I always think like that's a good sign, right? That means that like that was the path. And then how cool, like that turned into you developing and creating your own program, which then like that's the ripple. It really positively impacted me and I'm sure Abby as well. And, you know, we're going to take those tools, you know, in our lives as well. Like what a beautiful, like cyclical thing that came out of a tragedy, truly. So just have to mention that I appreciate you sharing, by the way.
I love that. I love just the impact, you know, that it was so impactful for you both. Cause I know non-verbally how impactful it was for me. So it's just wonderful that the ripples have continued to extend and hopefully people listening will feel pulled to also follow their intuition and connect to the things and have these ripples continue to extend outward.
Absolutely. I love that theme. Right. And especially with play. And again, I have to just keep going back of like, as adults, we just have this sort of like natural aversion to like, especially because Abby said that like, there's like, it's like non-goal oriented and that feels non-productive, which feels like a waste of time, even though like, you know, there's a pull, like it nurtures you, it makes you feel calm and like, yeah, like how necessary that is. Anyways, I could feel like I could keep talking to you all about this, but I kind of want to talk a little bit. I want to ask you, Rachel, about like sort of a little bit of like logistics. Cause I think a lot of times when we talk about self-care or therapy or healing, it kind of falls into this like once a week for an hour with your healer and then, you know, until you feel better. But what a cool, like a real cool aspect of a retreat is that it's like 3 days, right? Like, or one day or like a weekend, like, and it's all day you're kind of working on this healing. So I'm curious, like, how do you think having that 3-day retreat benefits the participant as opposed to kind of spacing it out an hour a week?
Yeah, I mean, it really allows you to plug in to the process. Now, absolutely, having your recurrent sessions, whatever that may be, right? Whatever serves your mind and body and soul, you know, that's wonderful to have that experience throughout the week. And we're able to kind of chime into it and right back out, right? It's like sometimes becomes a to-do.
Yes.
And that's something else too, like with self-care is there's a fine line in terms of self-care being legitimate self-care and it becoming another obligation. So then sometimes people are like, well, this self-care isn't working. Well, is the focus more that this is just another thing to check off the list? And like, unfortunately, the reality is, yes, that's the case for a lot of people a lot of times, because you're spot on. Socioculturally, there is this expectation that we need to perform. We need to produce. How can we contribute to the greater good of whatever that may be, right? A product in general, whatever. But being able to really dive a bit deeper and remain in that space for just a little bit longer, I think helps us kind of dive through the depths, right? Like I just envisioned in my mind, you know, going on a little coral reef expedition. I'm speaking as if I've ever done this. So if anyone has done this before, please know my ignorance. I've done snorkeling before, so maybe I'll stick with that. But I like the concept of the deep dive. But ultimately, you know, are we going to, I mean, it's a great analogy. It's like, are you going to kind of snorkel and like stay kind of close to the water and enjoy it a little bit? Or are you going to go a little bit deeper and explore the depths and, you know, see what's there, uncover it, sit with it, examine it, explore it, and then, you know, exit the water. You know, I think that's beautiful. And also water tends to represent emotions. So even more so, I love that example. But yeah, I think that the extended time allows us a little bit more depth. Not to say that you can't have that with some of the smaller dives, like you absolutely can. So I don't want to negate anything. Just want to throw that caveat out there.
So what would you say to someone who's on the fence about investing time and money into a retreat?
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, be honest with yourself. Mm. You know, like if you're thinking that and you're just not in the time or space in your life to do that, that's okay. And if you're so busy that you can't do that, then it would be helpful to maybe find some other things that you can do to nurture yourself. I think it's very hard for so many people to feel like you can add something onto your schedule, right? And it goes back to what I was just saying, like it now becomes another to-do versus a way of being and experiencing your day, your week, whatever it may be. So I think, yeah, it's a balance. All is a balance, right? Be realistic with yourself and if you don't have the time and space, make sure that you're making it in some way, even if it's little spurts here and there. Because we can't, it's like, I use a lot of metaphors and analogies. You can't tell about me yet, but it's like we're cars, right? Like we can't just keep driving and driving and driving and driving. We need to stop to refuel. Like we cannot, it gets to a place where we're not able to. And just like Mona was saying, like if we are not paying attention to our bodies will tell us, you know, with illnesses, for example, right? Like, oh, you're not going to listen. Okay. Well, here, I'm going to make you listen then. So refueling yourself when you can, but also when you need, and not waiting until you're fully burnt out.
Yes. I love that. I need to hear that too, right? Like I think even as like providers and healers that we are so easy to give that, you know, tidbit and advice to other folks. And we kind of like replicate that in our own lives as well. And so it really does help, right? And I think the more we do it, the self-care and centering that, the more you see the benefits and the more you're more inclined to do it. So I like sort of what you're saying. It's just like sort of start small, follow the intuition, you know, and don't put pressure on yourself. If it's not the right time, it's not the right time. And you will eventually find it, but not waiting until you're like completely like out of gas.
Yeah, for sure.
Rachel, this has been amazing. We're big fans of you, obviously, if you can't tell.
Fans of both of you, genuinely.
Oh, much love. How can people find you? If people want to work with you, people want to follow your work, how can they reach you?
Yeah, I have my private practice website is creativepsychological.com. I also have a Beacons page. It's similar to like a Linktree in a way.
Okay.
So I think it's Beacons. I know it's Doc Vader.
We'll put it in the show notes.
Okay,
so, yeah. Send it to us and we'll make sure it gets in the show notes.
Perfect. Yeah. So that has some of my like consultation services, a direct link to that, and some of my publications and any upcoming training. So that tends to be the most updated and easy way to see some of those things. But if you want to learn more about my practice, you're welcome to go to my practice website. I'm also pretty active on social media, so I'll make sure you have those links as well. But I have a professional page under my name and a professional page under my practice name, and there are daily during the weekday posts. Just inspiration, love, support, little sunshine.
And shared those before. So, thank you so much, Rachel. This was awesome. It was so nice to reconnect with you and
keep us
updated if there's any retreats in the future.
Yes, definitely. Thank you so much. And thanks everyone for joining. Continue to take care of yourselves. I'll see you later.
Bye.
Thanks again for joining us.
Check out our show notes to learn more about this episode and to find all the ways to follow us.
And remember, if you're curious, try it.